Oh, we're on. Okay, good. Oh, I can actually see the thing. The beauty of technology. Anyway, my name is Joe, if you've never met me, and we're going to be in 2 Corinthians 3, if you want to turn there. Now, if you were with us last time, Adam was talking about the aroma of Christ, which we'll just read one verse from that section. To the one we are an aroma that brings death, to the other an aroma that brings life, and who is equal to such a task? The idea being that, you know, the way that you live your life, assuming, of course, that you have already started a relationship with God, that optimistically the way that you live your life should be giving off some sort of aroma that would affect people. Now, not always positively. Some people would maybe interact with the way that you live your life in a positive way and feel like they want to start a relationship with God, and others might feel upset and repulsed. So, you know, this question, who is equal to such a task, sort of dovetails in with what we're talking about this morning. Oh, almost said evening. So that is, you know, God's superior new covenant. You know, there was the old covenant, which is, you know, the word covenant, I don't know too many people who actually use that word, except if they're talking about the Bible. So you can just do a find and replace in your mind that every time we say covenant, we mean contract. That, you know, God will make an agreement with us. There's an old agreement, which is sort of the, you know, Ten Commandments and all the 600 and however many others that there are that, you know, follow these things. And then eventually, with Christ coming, there's a new contract that God draws up and says, okay, here is a new contract that you can have to start a relationship with me. And this new covenant, which we're going to see today, is very much different and very much better than the old contract that was available to have with God. Okay, so let's jump right in. 3:1. Are we beginning to commend ourselves again, or do we need, like some people, letters of recommendation to you or from you? You yourselves are our letter, written on our hearts, known and read by everyone. You show that you are a letter from Christ, the result of our ministry, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God. Not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of human hearts. Okay, so just to clue you in on some of this, he's saying something with this new covenant is not exactly written with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God. It's not, you know, chiseled into tablets of stone, but is on tablets of human hearts. So there's one of the little differences that we have, this new contract, is that it's personal. It's within us. It's not some external written code or laws, commandments, and rituals. Such confidence we have through Christ before God. Not that we are competent in ourselves to claim anything for ourselves, but our competence comes from God. He has made us competent as ministers of a new covenant, not of the letter, but of the Spirit. For the letter kills, but the Spirit gives life. Okay, so I'm going to back up here a little bit just to grasp what he's talking about before we're moving on here. And the first thing, there's nothing wrong with the top of this. I just want you to focus on the bottom part where it says, do we need, like some people, letters of recommendation to you or from you? So if we're doing our detective work, we can assume somebody in this group must be showing up with letters of recommendation, right? Or otherwise, why would he write something like this? So there are these people who are coming in. You know, they're sort of brandishing these, I come from so-and-so, and here's my letter of recommendation, and they kind of are rolling out some sort of teaching. It's probably some sort of teaching having to do more with the old covenant, just considering the way that he's laying out his arguments. And, you know, that was a common thing in the early church. Well, common thing in the church, period, end of sentence, really, is that it's really easy to sort of look at, these commandments that God gives us. This is what you do that is right. This is what you do that is wrong. You should abstain from these things, and you should try really hard, and that sort of thing. That sort of mindset is very appealing to human nature because we kind of like to work hard. We kind of like to be able to show that, yeah, I'm good. I've earned things. I'm good. I don't do Patrick does. He's bad. Sorry, I always pick on Patrick. But So, you know, that kind of mindset is very appealing to us. And here are some people, apparently, who are kind of bringing this emphasis on the old contract. And Paul's like, look, the old contract is from God, okay? Nothing inherently wrong with the old contract, except when it competes with the new one, okay? The new covenant, because it is so different, because it is so much greater, should always take priority over this old one and make sure that we're not getting the cart before the horse here. So, you know, who would it be that would pull this move? Well, the people who had been following the old contract were, you know, Jewish believers who had, you know, that was their Bible. I mean, just the Old Testament part of their Bible, that's what they have and that's what they believe. And you can see if you read books like Acts that people who followed that would kind of show up sometimes after Paul left town, maybe when he's still in town, and try to be like, oh, you received the free gift of God. You started a relationship with him. He forgave all of your sins, not only the ones you did, but also the ones you're going to do. That's awesome. Now, how about getting circumcised and following all these commandments? And, you know, and on the one hand, that might seem sort of ludicrous because what about all the free gift and what about all this forgiveness? Why do I have to do all this? But actually, people kind of are gravitated towards that. They're like, okay, cool. I think I will earn myself some favor from God because that kind of thing is within our control. You know, that I can pump myself up and do a bunch of good, and then God kind of has to be on my side. That is a comfortable situation for us. So this message usually worked when people would come in and sort of start to peddle this around. Okay, another bit that we have here. You show that you are a letter from Christ, the result of our ministry, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of human hearts. So apparently these people represent this written in ink and tablets of stone. So, you know, they implicitly are kind of teaching that, yeah, okay, you do get forgiveness from God, but you also maybe earn your way to God. So that's kind of a strange mixed message. I want to point out that, you know, I've never met whoever these people were. They died thousands of years ago. But I find myself, I'll speak just for me, I don't know about you guys, I find myself often thinking, oh, I better work harder so that God's happy, or I better avoid that thing, or God won't listen to me, or I'll be cursed, or something like that. I mean, these mindsets will seep in, and I'm trying to think who I've talked to that, like, somehow won me over to that. I don't know who it is. I mean, I don't think that somebody came and tricked me into thinking that I should earn my way into a relationship with God, and yet I think it anyway. It's because it's really easy to buy into that mindset. And, you know, so it has been throughout the entire history of the church. And you could see why Paul, who's writing this letter, would be concerned, because it is a very popular message, an easy one for people to kind of latch onto. The message of, why don't you prove that you're good and earn your way to God instead of asking for the free gift of God? Okay. Moving on here, we're kind of recapping on this. Now, or not that we are competent in ourselves to claim anything for ourselves, but our competence comes from God. So, Paul is reminding them of the glory of the new covenant. You know, there's a simple gospel message rather than this really complex old covenant. You know, it isn't this, you know, whole system of living that we have to absorb. It's really just a relationship with God that we start in a moment in time. It's described here in Ephesians 2:8 and 9. For it is by grace that you have been saved through faith. And not, this is not of yourselves, it is the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast. And that, you know, that applies to us even today. If you find yourself in a situation just at any place, really, at any time, and you turn to God and ask for forgiveness, then it will be given to you. And it's kind of, that's it. I mean, that's, you've started your relationship with God. Are there more things you could do in your relationship with God? Yes, absolutely. You can grow in your relationship with God. Sure. Plenty of sacrifices to be made if you want to, but God gives you his unconditional favor at that time. It's not going to go away, and you can't do a bunch of bad things and God's like, blah, you're a rotten egg now, dead to me. That isn't going to happen. And we might feel like that happens, but he does not, and that's the promise that we get. So you could see why this new covenant is so powerful Something like that could come into your lives and just give you an unconditional pass, unconditional acceptance from God, essentially just by asking for it. That is a very powerful message. Following 600-some-odd laws is exhausting. I mean, you just pick the Ten Commandments, you're going to wear yourself out. I mean, imagine all the rest. So it is, you know, again, a very different message. Okay, our next section here, starting in 3:7. Now, if the ministry that brought death, which, again, is the Old Covenant, which was engraved in letters on stone, came with glory, so that the Israelites could not look steadily at the face of Moses because of its glory, transitory though it was, will not the ministry of the Spirit be even more glorious? Again, let's look at these two verses here, because he's referencing a story they would have been very familiar with. I mean, I don't know all of you real well. I'm willing to guess there's at least somebody here who's not super familiar with Moses wearing a veil over his face because God's glory was reflecting off of it. That's a weird story. That's weird even if you are familiar with that story. I mean, that's kind of, I'm trying to imagine what that must have been like. So let's, you know, look a little bit at what he's talking about here. We're actually going to look at that story a little bit later, the Moses with the veil over his face. But for now, what he's talking about here, he's making what's called an a fortiori argument, which we don't use as much. To give you an example of what it means is sort of like, oh, if my son Micah can carry a gallon of milk, then how much more can I carry? 1.5 gallons, maybe. So, you know, but it's instead of, oh, if A is true, then B is the same. It's if A is true, then B is like extra, extra more true. And that sort of argument is really common in the Bible. It's not as commonly used in our day. So just to kind of peek back at this again, realizing that. So he's saying, okay, the ministry that brought death, meaning the old law, which is engraved on letters of stone, came with glory because, you know, again, here Moses came down and had these commandments on tablets, and just being there talking with God caused his face to glow and be really radiant and eventually, you know, kind of faded away. But if that came with glory, the old one, so, you know, the Israelites couldn't look at his face, then will not the ministry of the Spirit be even better than that, when Moses was so holy and glowing with God's power that nobody could even look at him? This new covenant is even more powerful. It has more power than that. So, if the Corinthians accept the old covenant as being glorious, then, you know, they should be able to see how much more the new covenant has that same sort of glory. Now, moving on here, if the ministry that brought condemnation was glorious, how much more glorious is the ministry that brings righteousness? For what was glorious has no glory now in comparison with the surpassing glory. And if what was transitory came with glory, how much greater is the glory that lasts? Therefore, since we have such a hope, we are very bold. Okay, so looking at this section again here. In theory, if we are grasping the old covenant, which is, you know, the commandments, things like the Ten Commandments, the laws, and then the new covenant, which is God's forgiveness, God's unconditional love for us, he allows his Spirit to live within us, and we understand how much greater that is, we ought to be very bold with the truth, to be sharing to other people. It ought to bring a lot of zeal and excitement into our lives when we realize how great it really is. Suppose you are instead thinking, you know, yeah, I do believe in God. I do make sacrifices for God. I love God. I prioritize God above all else. But a lot of times I feel like tired about doing things for God. I feel kind of like guilty sometimes, or confused, or these sorts of things. That seems to indicate that maybe there's a bit of a disconnect that is going on here. You're kind of losing touch of what the relationship with God actually is. Might be sliding back into this old covenant, which is a bit temporary. If you yourself feel like, oh, my relationship with God, sometimes there are these high points where everything's been kind of glowing, like maybe Moses' face was, but then it's just sort of air leaking out of the tire over time. I feel like a little less, a little less, a little less. Well, it shouldn't be that way. Theoretically, properly understood, the new covenant ought to be something that lasts, according to what we just read. So to sort of explain this, you know, kind of idea, I've got a silly example here. Suppose I want to, you know, race your car in the parking lot. We'll just assume in this scenario that everybody in Xenos just falls in love with drag racing in parking lots. And okay, so that's like cool. And before and after every meeting, everybody's going and racing their cars. And that's, they found out that Xenos in ancient Greek actually means drag racing. So that's like our thing. And we do that. So I'm going to race you in the parking lot. Now it turns out that my friend, he lent me his older model Tesla car for racing. And oh, I don't, you want to go into a YouTube vortex? You know, check out like Tesla cars and see their capabilities. I wasted so much time. They're fast. For some reason, they can get off the line fast. I don't know. I don't know much about cars. But I have this Tesla car, and I'm like, I kill anybody. You? I'll kill you right now with my Tesla car. And then I win, and I'm like, ha-ha, I'm so great. And I've got this thing, and it's giving me confidence. It works. I know this thing works, okay? This is working for me. Maybe I don't win 100% of the time, but I feel like what I've got's really good, and that works for me, right? Now, suppose my friend who gave me the car is like, hey, now I'll lend you my brand new 2018 Tesla Model S, which I'm told is the fastest one. Now, part of me might be kind of like, okay, that's cool. But a part of me, and I'm talking real life here, might be like, the old one is a known quantity. I know that old one's fast. I've raced 100 times with it. This new one, I suppose it's new, so it's probably good, but maybe I get in and it makes funny sound or it doesn't feel right, and I'm kind of, let's just go with the old one. The old one is working real good for me, and this kind of mindset can kind of creep in where we're like, the new one, I'm sure it's fine, maybe they're equal, I don't know, but I just feel comfortable with that old car because I saw it work so many times. This is us when we get kind of, you know, trying to get into a system of like, let's earn, let's try to be good, let's try to follow this old covenant. There's nothing wrong with God's old covenant. It's good. You know, it's the old model Tesla car. It's good. You can waste some people with that thing. But the new one is very much superior. And, you know, sometimes I think what happens, at least with me, I'm going to venture to guess that at least like one other person out here might also think this way. Maybe like two, I don't know. But maybe you find yourself thinking like, okay, I feel like I've got a relationship kind of almost with God's work and not with him. You know what I mean? Like, I've got, okay, I don't trust my friend. I trust the car that he gave me, if you understand what I'm saying. Like, I know that this car is good. Suppose my friend tells me this next one's great or whatever. All I know is my experience with the car is really good. I believe in the car, not the guy who gave it to me. Why would I do that, though? I mean, shouldn't you imagine that if the, you know, maybe if I thought my friend is like, oh, he's known to be a prankster, he's giving me this terrible car to embarrass me. But do we feel that way about God? I mean, I hope not. I mean, we ought to be able to feel like, okay, if God is giving us something, here is this new relationship, here is this forgiveness, and here is a superior way to have a relationship with me, then we ought to feel completely confident in that thing. And we ought to feel completely excited about that thing. And it shouldn't bring with it the feelings of guilt or the feelings of fatigue or all these other things that can, you know, go with the older contract that we have. It should instead be really refreshing. You know, Jesus himself said, take my burden upon you, for my burden is light, my yoke is easy. Just think about that for a while. I sometimes read that and kind of laugh about how, like, did I, like, pick up the wrong yoke at the yoke store? Because that does not work for me. I sometimes feel really tired, and I feel like I'm carrying way too much. And, you know, we'll do that to ourselves. It's not God like, yeah, do more. Blah, you're so busy, try putting that on, carry 100 pounds while you're at it, blah, you know what I mean? And he's trying to, like, crush us and see, like, ha-ha, I got them spinning a bunch of wheels all at once. Now I'm going to throw a disaster at them, ah, you know what I mean? And, you know, sometimes we feel like our life is unfolding that way. But if we trust God, we got to realize, okay, somehow this is supposed to be an easy, nice, enjoyable relationship that we have with him. It's something that is actually going to bring refreshment. It is something that is actually going to be pleasant. So when we're sliding into that, it isn't from God. It's from us. we're starting to add something. We're starting to, you know, latch onto something that isn't actually part of that message. If you're like me, and okay, I was just talking to somebody here ahead of time. I don't have a smartphone, okay? And this example playing out in real life. I have a stupid phone because I'm like, you know, I'm sure the smartphone's better, but I don't know. I got this phone. I like this phone. And I'm being stubborn about it. I'm not going to go buy a smartphone after I leave here. So you can tell that I've got some stubbornness in me. That sort of stubbornness translates to other concepts, probably like maybe I do feel a little bit more comfortable trying to prove to God that I'm good. Maybe I do feel a little bit more comfortable trying to, like, you know, win these spiritual victories and show everyone, oh, I'm such a big deal. I don't know if you got the memo. You know, that feels good. I mean, you know, that part of that's really appealing. And, you know, it's kind of like, hey, I don't know if you heard about this, but God did this great thing and I was there. You know, that doesn't roll off the tongue as easily. I mean, you know, us kind of submitting to God and saying it's his work, it's through his power. I was used by him, and I humbly accept that happened, but it was not me, none of my effort, it was only through God. That isn't cool, that is not exciting. I feel like, you know, here's this great thing that I built, that's me, that was my power. And, you know, we kind of are gravitated towards things like that which we can control, which we can sort of feel like, oh, I can take credit for this because I made so many sacrifices. Anyway. Moving on here. Okay. So we are not like Moses, who had put a veil over his face to prevent the Israelites from seeing the end of what was passing away. But their minds were made dull, for to this day, the same veil remains when the old covenant is read. It has not been removed because only in Christ is it taken away. Even to this day, when Moses is read, a veil covers their hearts. But whenever anyone turns to the Lord, the veil is taken away. Now, the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And we all who, with unveiled faces, contemplate the Lord's glory, are being transformed into his image with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. Okay, so let's check out this actual story. Maybe it'll give us a little bit of insight into what he's talking about here, because he's really going hard in the paint with this Moses and the veil over his face example. And if you've never actually read it, it's probably somewhat confusing. I'm afraid I might disappoint you that it'll probably still be confusing after we read it, but let's read it. So here we are in Exodus 34. Now, this is, okay, he's been going up and getting all these laws carved by the finger of God into the stone tablets and all that sort of thing. And now, when Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the two tablets of the covenant of law in his hands, he was not aware that his face is radiant because he had spoken with the Lord. When Aaron and all the Israelites saw Moses, his face was radiant, and they were afraid to come near him. But Moses called to them, so Aaron and all the leaders of the community came back to him, and he spoke to them. Afterward, all the Israelites came near him, and he gave them all the commands that the Lord had given him on Mount Sinai. When Moses finished speaking with him, he put a veil over his face. But whenever he entered the Lord's presence to speak with him, he removed the veil until he came out. And when he came out, he told the Israelites what he had been commanded. They saw that his face is radiant, then Moses would put the veil back over his face until he went to speak with the Lord. Okay, so there is that story. And again, it is a little bit strange that apparently his face is glowing so much that it, like, bothered people, and he had to, you know, cover it with a veil so that they couldn't see how bright his face was, because he had, like, reflection of God, sort of residual God had wore off on his face, and it made them feel strange, which I suppose it could make sense. This kind of thing you do see in the Old Testament. You might be imagining to yourself, like, ooh, if only I could see God. Or, oh, if only I could hear God's voice or something, it'd be so much easier to follow him. The people that did see these things were kind of like, oh, enough of that. Okay, no more. Sorry. Changed my mind. Seen enough God. Even the reflection of God on Moses' face is bumming me out, so no more of that. They got to hear the voice of God giving the Ten Commandments, and the people were like, Moses, you go speak to God yourself, because if we hear this, we're just going to die. And, you know, it isn't necessarily what you would think would happen from, like, I finally get to see God. Finally get to hear the voice of God. How exciting, how exciting. And instead, when people actually interacted with this, they're like, this freaks me out. I don't like it. No, enough. So one of the points that he's making about this, though, is that it would kind of, like, some of the radiance would build up on his face and then eventually it would kind of, like, fade away over time. And then he'd have to go back and kind of get back in there with God, and then it would sort of fade away over time. That system, very similar to the system of the old contract that we had with God, with, like, go and do a bunch of good things, and maybe that'll kind of build you up, build up your confidence. Now you feel like maybe you can pray to God, and it's cool. Maybe you feel refreshed when you're reading your Bible because you've been doing some good things, but then it's like the air going out of the tire, starting to feel guilty, I'm starting to feel tired, I'm starting to feel like God's angry with me. Better go do some more good things. And, you know, you're kind of in this endless pattern of work, 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 work. Okay, it's fading away, it's fading away, it's fading away. And it's exhausting, right? Whereas the new covenant, properly understood, is not that way. We ought to be able, I mean, we have the Holy Spirit living within us. It should be that it's just enjoyable. It is not burdensome at all times. So, to draw some conclusions from this, you can sign your contract with God today, I suppose. That's the first one. Make sure you sign the new one, though. The bad one, you know, the old ones, it's fine. It's the old Tesla. But if you're going to get something for free, why not get the new one, right? I mean, the new one is the one that actually works to get you into relationship with God, to get you into heaven. So for that reason alone, it's worth doing. And it's something that really, honestly, you don't have to, like, here's the sequence of words that you say. Or you have to be with the holy person and hold their hand while you're crying and confessing all the things you've done. It's not like that. I mean, it is really just a moment in time turning to God and asking him to forgive you for the wrong things that you've done. It is so simple that it's kind of hard to believe that that would actually work. Okay, our second thing that we have, the old contract of doing good works for God is always really appealing, partly because we have experience in this one, okay? You know, if you have ever tried to, like, do good, which, okay, I mean, it's hard to, I'm not sure, even some of the people I knew who were really bad, I'm probably one of those people. I mean, I got suspended so many times in high school that if I missed one more period, that I couldn't graduate. And they, like, had me up for expulsion hearings, like, a few times. So I'm sure most of my friends would consider me to be that bad person that they knew, right? I felt like even in that state, I was sort of, like, still trying to do good, and you still have this appeal to, like, I want to do good things to feel better about myself, maybe to kind of feel like I'm, I don't know, earning something. And in fact, if you're a Christian, too, and you're kind of like, ooh, I'm scoring some points with God, maybe this will pay off on the back end. That's a really easy message to, you know, get drawn into. That's a really appealing thing to feel like, oh, I've got God in my corner because I did some God things. I gave some money to the church. Ha ha! God's basically obligated to bless me with money because of what I did. So, and it's this transaction. It's really sort of like a pop machine. I put that money in. This machine owes me that pop. That's how it works, you know what I mean? And we kind of will reduce our relationship with God this way because, you know, to some extent, maybe it has been working for you. Maybe some of those things do work to an extent, but the error is always coming out of that tire, though. It is always sort of, and then you got to do it again, and then you got to do it again. And you're always in the back of your mind wondering, I wonder if I have done enough good. I wonder if I have avoided enough bad. And that will haunt you. It should. It should haunt you. This is why God gave us this new contract in the first place, is because something like that is not a great relationship to be having. Okay? I imagine that if I had a relationship with my wife where she has kind of got this, like, scoreboard, you know, over our mantle of, like, okay, give me 100 points a week or else, that might change our relationship dynamic. Maybe. I mean, you know, you start to feel like I must do these things. I haven't done enough recently. What does or else even mean? She'll divorce me or she's going to sell all my tools or, you know, I don't know. And, you know, that would be, and in any human relationship, we would very quickly understand that something like that is not going to be a great vehicle for you having a good relationship with somebody if you've kind of got this big scoreboard. Do the following or else. That is going to really add insecurity to the relationship. Probably some resentment and a bunch of other stuff as well. Our relationship with God, God knew this. He created us. He knew it would be that way, which is why he said, no scoreboard, none of that, none of these things. Don't show up to me and say, oh, Lord, please forgive me, please. I did all these good things. Just don't kill me. You know what I mean? He's like, that's okay. Having that conversation 100 times is not a good relationship. Let's wipe the whole thing out. That's what he did by sending Jesus down to pay for our relationship with God. And when we understand, no, that stuff is wiped out, is gone. Yeah, you still might feel guilty about the stuff that you do. I know I do. But it's gone. And God still loves you and will always love you and will continue to bless you, provided that you're willing to accept it. I mean, the same mindset of accepting a relationship with God is also how we grow in our relationship with God. Are we willing to kind of put out our hands and accept what he's giving us? Now, a lot of times we put our hands to work and we're too busy to hold our hands out to accept what he's giving us because we're trying to earn back somehow. So, the glory of the new covenant with God really, you know, does outshine the new contract, and we should be able to understand that. That should have some sort of effect because, you know, when we understand and embrace the new contract, we will be bold with it. We will have zeal. Not like we need to sort of like, oh, I got to get ready for the game. I got to pump myself up. I got to decide that following God is actually really exciting. You know what I mean? It'll be organic. It's natural. You understand that something's exciting because it is exciting, because it is invigorating, because it is giving you a lot of life and energy. It is the way that it ought to be working. And not in a way that the air is kind of going out of the tire at all times and you're always kind of feeling like I got to re-up, I got to work hard, God's angry with me, or that sort of thing. That's not the contract that he actually gave us. It's a contract, I think, that we're always trying to sort of steer ourselves back towards. So, that's what I have. So, I don't know if you guys have any comments or questions, stories of any sort. I think I'm supposed to tell people about this. If you want to get a free book, you can go to the Welcome Center, which I think is over there, and you can get a free book. And I don't know when I'm supposed to talk about this other stuff. I probably should ask them that. You can fill out a feedback card, which will eventually show. Maybe they give you that in the packet. That's probably what happened, yeah. And you can put down your feedback. We'd like to hear your feedback, even negative feedback. That's fine. You can tell me how much I suck. You hate the Cavs. That's all right. I only have a Varejao jersey. I don't have the good stuff. So, let's see. Oh, yeah, you can give money when that's going by, but that's just for people. If you consider this to be your church and you're giving to God, that's cool. If you're a guest, do not feel obligated to give money. That is something that, you know, it's just for those of us who already have a relationship with God, who consider this our church and want to support it. And, parents, if you have children in Oasis, you should try to get them before 11:45 or something crazy will happen. So deal with that. All right. So, yes, the questions and all the rest of it, if somebody has. I think they give you a mic, so, yeah. I don't know. Yes.
I am so glad I got to come down from Oasis and hear this teaching. I sit around my relationship with God and making like big decisions like maybe selling your house or buying a car or giving something away or spending what's a big decision? Or
yeah.
Should you help your kid out or something? And I always... Don't listen to her. But I'm always like, oh, God's going to be so mad at me if I do this. What's going to happen? How is he going to... Wait a minute. Just like you remind, he always loves us. He's dependable.
Mm-hmm.
He is the new car. It's going to start when you put the key in the engine. He's there. He's not going to leave us. He's not going to forsake us. Even if it goes sideways, he still loves us. And yeah. just continually remember that he is not this big guy in the sky going, oh, bad decision. Yeah. That's how it went. Even if it is a bad decision, he still loves us.
No, absolutely.
And that's what I took away from that. And I was actually able to use that yesterday with someone. And she's faced with a very difficult situation. Mm. And just to remind her that God is so much bigger than the part that we see. And that he still loves her. So,
yeah, thanks. Well, thank you so much for sharing that. I mean, I think, yeah, a lot of times, at least with most of us, we'll kind of imprint ourselves on God. And we're kind of like, well, if I were God, I would be like the following. And that's why we kind of assume that he's up there like, ha, God, you're doing bad. And, you know, well, at least that's how I would be if I was God. So, yeah, okay, you had...
Okay, the way Judy just closed with God being bigger than we see, on that, in the spirit of that, I've been slow to come to terms with how to see the old covenant, new covenant relationship. A lot of my time as a Christian, I was kind of cloudy on how to view that. And what's come to my mind lately is seeing the covenants as like stair steps toward God. So, you know, if I'm on a set of stairs going up, I'm grateful that the steps below me were there, even though I'm no longer on them.
Mm.
Right? They served a very important and practical purpose, as does the original covenant, the Old Testament covenant. It's and in terms of us looking back, you know, how should I view that? I you know, we understand biblically that we're not bound to follow the old covenant, but we are bound to appreciate what its purpose was. And like I would appreciate the purpose of the steps below me.
Yeah.
You know, and what's also invigorating on this topic, I think, is, you know, God has got a purpose. And so going forward, as Christians, we have an eternity with God. And there's going to be other stair steps across eternity. At least I believe there will be. This is just my opinion, of course. But as meaningful as the steps are that we have participated in, going forward, you know, we're not going to just float around on clouds and have strum heart strings. We are going to be doing meaningful, purposeful things because that is who God is, and we are made in his image. And you know, there was purpose in the Old Testament, purpose in the New Testament, purpose in eternity.
Sure.
That's how I see it.
That's great. I'm going to steal your thing with the stair steps. I really like that because I think that a lot of times, I mean, I still to this day am consumed by a mistake that I made in second grade. And I laugh about it, except that I do still secretly feel bad about it. I mean, it's absurd. My kid is in second grade now. I see the kinds of decisions that he makes, and I'm like, yeah, there's about a billion he could choose from, okay? I mean, it's not like a second grader is going to be making decisions like that all the time. But because it's me, I want to feel bad about it. It's like I want to torture myself about these stupid things instead of appreciating them. It's like, no, I did learn from that, obviously. The fact that I still remember it kind of shows that did teach me a lesson, which did, you know, bring me to the point where I am at. So, yeah, that's good. I'm stealing it from you. Sorry.
You know, when read through this and you go back to that account there of Moses and his face, you know, just glowing because he was in God's presence. You know, oftentimes I find myself, like, if I'm reading in his word every day and I get super excited about something I've read and I want to go share it with somebody at work who I know doesn't know God, or maybe they're new in their relationship. And I go and I'm super excited. And then I'm totally defeated when they're like, I don't really want to hear that today.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, I'm just not into it. And so I want to put that veil over my face when I'm interacting with people because, well, I don't want to be that person, right? Or I don't want to be offensive. I don't want to be, you know, I want to be accepted and I want to be loved. And so this was a good reminder that, you know, Moses didn't care. When he was with God, he enjoyed his time and he reveled in it. And when he came back in front of his people, he was honoring. They didn't want to see his glory. But so he put his veil on, but he still went back to God continuously because that was his treasure. You know, and oftentimes I maybe don't want to go back to God as often because, well, I'm rejected, or no one wants to hear what I have to say, or sure. No one shares the enthusiasm that I share, you know, and that's a good reminder that God's always there, and it's okay to be excited about what I'm reading. It's okay to be reveling in my relationship with him. And if it's not appealing to somebody else, okay. But that, yeah. But I don't need, but I should not withdraw from God.
Absolutely. I think that's really true. I mean, I think, at least for myself, I can really maybe put it together and really grab some good understanding when it's just like me and God. And then when you interact with somebody else who maybe, yeah, I don't know, will challenge or reject or whatever it is, then it can kind of just slip you back into that old mindset of like, ah, I don't like it because it didn't work. And it becomes cause and effect again. And it's really easy to just like revert back. I think that, you know, it's like one of those terrible cards that you get that just like keeps wanting to like go the wrong direction. You really have got to sort of exert effort to keep it where it's supposed to go. Yeah.
Yeah. A question that's perplexed me many times when I was brought to the Lord, gladly accepted him. My life was a mess and everything and going through a lot of things. But over the last few months, some know that my mom's in Alzheimer's. She's in her last stages. And I brought her to Jesus with a friend of mine where she accepted Jesus. She was a Catholic, but her thing was, hey, all religions are the same. I've been a good person. Well, we explained it to her while she was still able to comprehend. But the thing that perplexes me is, you know, as we accept Jesus into our life, we're of course told that we have his undying love, unconditional love.
Yeah.
But my question is this. My father was an agnostic. You know, he was a scientist, so he's always looking for that scientific proof. But because he couldn't prove it, he had to say, yeah, I think there is something higher. But he never, as far as I know, ever accepted Jesus. So my question is, does our God give us unconditional love even if we didn't accept Jesus?
Well, I know what the Bible says is that, I mean, Jesus himself said, I'm the way, the truth, and life, and no one comes to the Father but through me. So there are statements like that. Now, at the same time, there are these other stories in the Bible, like, for instance, the Magi, the wise men that came. Somehow they had an understanding of God. I'm not sure that they necessarily, you know, went home and accepted Christ or something like that, but clearly God had been communicating to them somehow, and there is revelation that people get. Ultimately, you know, what somebody's final state is in a relationship with God is really between them and God, and there's no way that we could know and 100% sure, but whether they make it into, you know, God's grace or not, it's going to be through the work of Christ. And, I mean, I have every indication from what I read in the Bible that it is going to be something where they do understand Christ's role and his, you know, sacrifice and how they how that relates to their lives. I mean, but I don't know. I mean, if somebody else wants to chime in on that, they can. I think that, you know, knowing ultimately what somebody's fate is not something that, you know, we're necessarily called to do. I mean, that's not our place to be in that seat of judgment. That is, you know, God's, yeah.
Yeah, you really can't say what people did when they were younger either, because a lot of people as kids accepted Christ and then no one followed up on them, so we don't know what happened at that time. But I heard some really good analogies. You know, it's like when if you talk to people in the room, you know, most of the women in the room have been pursued by men that were insistent that the woman was going to love them regardless.
Okay.
And in some cases, they ended up marrying them, and, you know, and that's your own problem. You have to deal with that now. But, you know, to say that God would pursue you your entire life, which the Bible says he does, mm-hmm. And then at the end of your life, having chosen that you don't want to be with God, that at the end of your life, he says, nope, you're going to be with me anyways, would be unloving for him to do that. He values our free will greater than that. He loves us too much to override our free will.
So, yeah.
You know, and I think it was C.S. Lewis that said that at the end of life, we'll either say to God, thy will be done, or God will say to us, thy will be done.
Yeah.
But our will cannot be done and then be in his presence. So,
no, yeah, that's a great way of putting it. That's a friend of mine explained that idea by saying, like, I buy, you know, some chocolates for my wife, and I give them to her, but I don't, like, force her mouth open and just start yamming the chocolates in there, like, you will enjoy it! Deal with that! You know what I mean? And God was not going to, you know, force us to enjoy a relationship with him either. I mean, it's presented for acceptance, and that's as far as it goes. So, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
You are a funny guy, I'm going to say right up front. Oh. You're hilarious. I'm going to take a different spin on it. When I just a different application, I should say. Verses 5 and 6, it says, not that we are adequate in ourselves to consider anything as coming from ourselves, but our adequacy is from God, who also made us adequate. Anytime I've tried to step out in faith, whether it be to teach home church for the first time or anything, lead a cell group, I always had these thoughts, I'm not adequate, you know, and they bombard me, you know, and I'd be like, you're right, I'm not adequate. Why am I doing this? You know, I should just not even try. And knowing this verse from taking it from a class, you know, this Holy Spirit brought it to my mind. You're right, you're not adequate. You will never, ever be adequate. You know, not just to stop there, but just to rely on God and his power. You know, it's God's power that makes us adequate in anything that we do for him. So I just wanted to share that application as well, because that's helped me so much in my walk.
No, yeah, that's it. It is great. But of course, when you admit that you're not adequate and it's God working through you, you're not able to puff your chest out as much and be like, see what I just did? I am that good. You know what I mean? And so, you know, it's double-edged. Sometimes we're kind of like, oh, it's great. Thank God. Ugh, we can rely on his spirit to be the one to carry this. And that's a relief that I don't have to do it. On the other hand, I'm not able to brag about it either. So that bothers me. You know what I mean? And it's, I think that tension is why we keep wanting to find our way back to that old covenant. Like, maybe I can brag just a little. But yeah. Cool. Yeah.
Hey, Joe, I was wondering if you could go in a little bit more detail about verse 2. He says, you are our letter written in our hearts, known and read by all men.
What? Yeah. Well, I think what he's getting at there is that, you know, you have sort of the letters of recommendation that these people are bringing in, and they're kind of like, so you trust me because Rabbi Gamaliel tells that I'm a great dude, and, you know, that comes across as like, oh, okay, their message is accepted. And he's saying, no, okay, look, you and your lives, the way that they have been affected, that's my letter, okay? You have been with me, you've seen how your own lives have been affected by the message that we brought, okay? I'm not going to bring you a letter of recommendation because we already have that relationship, and, you know, you just look at your own lives. You want a letter? Look at yourself. You know what I mean? Like, look at what has happened. Look at the before and after. I mean, that's essentially what he's kind of saying to them. Like, by contrast, instead of bringing something external from the outside to give me that credibility, I'm just going to appeal to our own relationship we already have and just what you have been through. That's my letter of recommendation. I don't need some other guy telling me I'm sweet. But yeah, that's a good question. Cool. Well, shall we pray, as they say? And I think they give you a microphone, so you can raise your hand if you want to do that.